Welcome back to a very special High Voltage Radio Hour. This is your host, Chelsea Schwartz, and it's been like a year since we did a podcast, and that's because we were considering phasing it out, and then the entertainment strikes happened, both the writer strike and the actor strike, and now we're finally past all of it, and we are so excited to be back. And today I have a very special guest, a dear friend of mine, Sarah Carey. Sarah, say hello.
Hello, everyone. Chelsea, I'm so excited to be back and talk movies with you. I don't know how long everyone's been following us or following Chelsea and High Voltage, but we used to do a thing called Streaming Wars, where we would talk and rate everything streaming on a channel we both have worked with, that hashtag show, which is super fun.
Yeah, I actually sort of miss Streaming Wars. That was a lot of fun, but it was also us trying to dig through every single piece of streaming originals that came out, reality shows, documentaries, scripted, whatnot. That was overwhelming. There is a lot of content.
So much so that I even then branched off into my own thing. So if you guys like what I have to say, head on over to Smells Like Teen Inks. You'll see me. You might catch Chelsea every once in a while, and we'll be talking about everything fun and angsty because there's so much content out there.
So much. And to get a little preview, if you missed Streaming Wars of what it was like, today we're going to do something fun. We're going to catch up on four recent films that came out. I'm going to set a timer. I've got Miss Minutes sitting next to me. That's right, Miss Minutes from Loki, Kitchen Timer. We're going to set it to 10 minutes, and we're going to talk about each of these four films for 10 minutes until Miss Minutes yells at us. So that should be a lot of fun. And first up, we're going to talk about Trolls Band Together. So, Sarah, are you ready to talk about this?
I'm so ready to talk about it.
All right. We're setting this timer. Here we go. 10 minutes. And there we go. All right. Trolls Band Together. This is, what, the third installment of the Trolls movies? And I have to say these movies in general are super fun, but this one was made for anyone who was ever a boy band lover at any point in their life.
100%. Now, I understand, like, everyone was so excited because Justin Timberlake got NSYNC back together to do a song, but that's not the only millennial boy band thing. We now have Branch, who is in a boy band, which I think is hilarious and really fun because throughout the first two movies, we never really got much of his backstory. We knew Grandma got eaten, and that was kind of it. So I really enjoyed getting to dive into his backstory and have it be a little meta with Justin Timberlake.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously there's a lot of NSYNC ties because NSYNC got brought back for a new song, the first song in 20 years, which just makes me happy because NSYNC for life, but that's a side note. There's like Menudo comments in this, and from like Menudo to 98 degrees and everything in between. And there's surprisingly with that so much adult humor for this family friendly movie that it really took me back, but like not adult humor that would make the little ones question things, like so subtle and so expertly written.
Absolutely. And it reminded me of Shrek because, you know, Shrek came out, I'm not even going to say how long ago, because it's a movie I loved growing up. And that had a ton of adult humor. So it kind of felt nice to go back and just remember that you can make fun, silly movies for adults, even with jokes that will go over kids' heads. So even if you go, oh, like I know I did at one point, the person next to you, the little one next to you, is going to have no idea why you even cared at that moment.
And honestly, they might laugh for a different reason. It kind of reminds me of watching the movie Three Amigos when I was a kid. And there were so many jokes that I laughed at as a kid that as an adult, I was like, you didn't even understand that joke. You laughed for an entirely different reason. And I love that kind of humor.
Me too. I actually got to speak to the director about it. And I asked what it's like to write a film like that, that has to walk the line a little bit. And he said they just really wanted to concentrate on making a movie for people. And that they just knew that the audience would go along the ride with them and that they really appreciated the audience has.
That's amazing. I also want to talk about the animation style in this film because there is that classic Trolls animation style that we've grown to know and love, but they also have throwbacks to more of like a hand-drawn 2D style artwork that kind of reminded me a little of Yellow Submarine.
Oh, yes.
Right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
A little
about.
Bit of like the blue meanies in there. It kind of felt like you were having an acid trip while watching the movie.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. There's, yeah, definitely. And then the joke at the end of that little moment was very fun.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? Hustle Mode is what, yeah. Like, it happens, like, twice in the machine, so it was sort of like a 70s callback for do the hustle.
They're like, oh, there is too much hustle.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I also have to say that Tiny Diamond continues to grow on me. This character is so fun, and then you forget that he's still technically supposed to be a baby, and then every now and then he just throws out a line of being like, well, I am like 4 weeks old or something, you know? Like, and you're like, oh my God, you're the most grown-up baby I have ever met.
Tiny Diamond has been one of my favorite characters since his birth. I loved his rap in the second movie. I love how him and Diggle have such like a friendship bond. Like, Diggle doesn't even speak words, but him and Tiny Diamond are besties. And he's just hilarious. And it is not Kel, it's Keenan, right, that does the voice for him, and I always forget. And then every once in a while the typical Keenan Thompson voice comes out, and I just love him even more.
Keenan really has come into his own lately too. Like, I mean, he's everywhere you turn, I feel like, lately. Keenan's in something, not to mention that they've brought back Good Burger, and Good Burger 2 just came out. But yeah, like, good for Keenan, you know?
Right. Good for him. Always working, saving SNL.
Yes, yes. Know? Really the highlight of SNL these days, if I have to go there, and I did.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I do also love, with the storyline of the brothers, that they all very much follow the boy band trope, even after leaving the boy band. Because, you know, you still had the nice guy that gets captured, which is part of the storyline of them having to find him and, like, hit the perfect harmony, family harmony. I loved the character who now lives on the beach and has like a bunch of kids. And,
yes.
You know, the older leader one that just can't let go of the role no matter what. And I just thought it was such a fun family movie. I thought the moments between Branch and Poppy, even, where they talk about real relationship stuff. Because that's another thing about the writing, is that they don't talk down to the audience. They treat them like the 10 years has passed. So Branch and Poppy have been in a relationship for a decade. And so they're having communication
issues.
That just
makes me feel old.
I know.
But they're having communication issues.
Yeah, they? And they're talking about real feelings and real moments. And I think for a kid's movie, I think what's considered a kid's movie.
It goes deep, yeah.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. And there's a lot, too, to unpack with Poppy, because she's got a lot of trauma of, like, feeling like she's an only child and wants a connection, and then meets her sister in this one and, like, reconnects with the family. And I kind of feel like maybe the next Trolls movie, if they go there, instead of all of the boy band love, we could get some girl group love in there.
Ooh.
You know, channel some Spice Girls or something.
Yes, I think that would be so fun. They just proved that they can do it. Even when they get to perform their numbers, they're doing like boy band moves.
Yes.
So let's go. Give me Poppy girl band. Give me a chair dance, because that was iconic for female like girl band members.
Yes.
It would be so fun.
Oh, it would be amazing. And then maybe like after that, we could have a fifth movie where it's like a battle of the bands with the girl groups and the boy bands, which we kind of had a battle of the bands in the last movie. I get it. But this is like next level pop, like dance off, sort of like imagine Zoolander when they have the dance off, but with Trolls. That's what I'm thinking.
I would love that. Mm-hmm. That would be amazing.
Absolutely. So yeah, I really can't recommend this movie enough for kids of all ages, and that includes adults that think that they're not kids at heart, because you still are. It's buried in there somewhere. I definitely think everybody should go see this. It's really surprising to me that they released it the week before Thanksgiving. I guess they didn't want to directly compete with Wish, which we'll talk about Wish in a minute. But I feel like there were so many releases in this last like 2 weeks that it's gotten overshadowed a bit. So this is my push for people to go watch it.
100%. If you are on the fence, if you've never been seen a Trolls movie, you could absolutely just dive in and enjoy it. And I know some people might not, because of the boy band era. This really is a movie for boy band fans. I really do think that, because I know when talking to some other people,
any kind of boy band whatsoever, New Kids on the Block, wherever you lay, like, please, if you were ever a boy band fan, this is for you.
100%.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, it's okay.
More of a thought.
Oh, because I know some of the like complaints that I've seen, I don't agree with, but I think as the movie's written for me.
What complaints have you seen?
It was that it was like too silly, too boy band heavy. I was like, that's what this is supposed to be.
No such thing as boy band heavy, first of all.
I'm like, what did you think this movie was? I'm like, have you seen the first two?
Right?
That's why I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean?
Those are people that clearly lost their inner child at some point and are having trouble reconnecting with it. And, you know, to them, I just send you a lot of love and big hugs and big troll hugs, you know?
Absolutely. Look, just put on a wig, put a jewel on your belly and just go and heal that inner child, because we all need it after the last year.
I have to tell you, something about this franchise makes me miss my troll dolls from when I was a kid.
Oh, my gosh.
And like, I kind of want to start a new collection. Oh. And that was our 10 minutes. See, nobody needed to hear about my troll love anyway. It was totally fun for the actual dolls themselves. All right, we talked about toys. Now let's talk about games. The Hunger Games, all right? So the Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes,
yes.
I believe is the full title of this prequel. All right, let's set the timer. We're going to get into it right now. Go.
Okay, so The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, it took me a long time to get that name.
Yeah, really? Why was that name so hard to, like, even now, I could be looking at it in front of me and I'd still be like, why is this title so difficult?
It does not roll off the tongue.
No.
I want to preface this by saying I read the book and I absolutely hated the book. It's not the story I wanted. I feel like it could have been part one of a three-part of other stories that I would have preferred to have. I thought a lot of the characters were very unlikable, and I did not believe that this was a love story. So that takes us into the movie itself. Go ahead.
I was going to say, interesting about the love story side of it, because I definitely don't feel like I caught that even from the movie. And for reference, as we continue talking about it, I have not read the book, so it'll be interesting to hear me and Sarah's different takes. Continue.
Oh, yeah. So as far as book to movie adaptation, I actually think this is weirdly the most accurate one, which I think almost makes it the best one. And somehow the movie with the actors bringing these characters to life actually made me really enjoy this movie. And I'm not quite sure how that happened because of how much I did not like the book.
That is very fascinating. For me, this film is broken up into three parts. And not literally, sometimes you like watch movies like Lord of the Rings has three different movies, one for each book. This was actually like black screen part one titled during the movie for those that have not seen it yet. And part one was great. Part two was great. Part three, they should have ended the movie at part two.
100%. That's how we all feel about the book as well. It all ends very abruptly, very randomly, with not a lot of meaning to it.
It just felt like part three was unnecessary. It felt like it was telling some other story after we had gotten through the climax of the games itself. Like, it's the Hunger Games. Shouldn't the thing focus on the games?
Well, I will say yes and no, only because this is a President Snow prequel. So this is supposed to be his story, his backstory, and kind of his start to his descent into madness, which I don't think President Snow is mad. I just think he's a person that loves power.
I feel like he loves power because at some point he was deeply wronged in his life. It's that class in villain story of them having to overcome some personal trauma of some sort.
Yeah, absolutely. Because his entire family died in the war, but the initial war that we always hear in the Hunger Games between the districts and the capital. So it's literally just him and his cousin Tigress, which was a shock in the book, and I feel like a shock in the movie to see that they were related. Now the story I want is then if they were so closely related and they loved each other so much so that Tigress risked everything to take care of them as a family, how did he wrong her so much that she was willing to turn her back on him and help the rebels take him down?
Yeah, that would be a story I would like to see.
So many questions. Yeah.
I will say that Tom Blythe really brought something to this role,
yes,
and made me way more interested in the Snow character than I was in any of the original films. And Viola Davis, I mean, Viola, you're amazing in everything you do, but I never knew that you could pull off batshit crazy so well.
Icon. She's an icon. She's so good as Dr. Gall. I knew going in, I was like, she's going to eat, you know, like her. And we have Jason Schwartzman.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's talk about Jason Schwartzman.
The best part of the movie.
Literally, I went into this movie and I'm looking at like the cast poster and I'm like, yeah, Peter Dinklage, Viola Davis, this is going to be great. Yeah. All of these, Jason Schwartzman, I'm sorry, who gave you a pass to leave the Wes Anderson world for this movie? I was very confused. Like, I did not see Jason Schwartzman fitting into this movie in any place. And then they gave him the perfect role, literally the shining star of this film.
I know, he's the first host of the ever, like, first ever aired Hunger Games like this. So for those who don't know, this is basically also the origin story of the Hunger Games as we know them from the original trilogy. So before, they like treat the tributes like cattle. They don't treat them kindly. They don't feed them. They starve them out. And it was Coriolanus who named him that?
I remember every time I was watching the movie and they said the name, I would repeat it three times so I could remember how to say the name, because I was just like, I'm never going to remember this.
It's just a bunch of Grecian hippies that were like, oh, this is what we're going to name them. And it's his classmates that kind of come up with the ideas of getting more people involved in the betting. And I always thought that was the most interesting part, was seeing that kind of come together. The actor who plays Sejanus made such an annoying, unlikable character so heartfelt and lovely to me. I actually was rooting for him and very sad for his demise in the end. In the book, I didn't care. Sounds so terrible, because I just found him annoying. Like, you know the scene in the movie when he like, you're all horrible, you're horrible, and like throws the chair? In the book, it happens like, so it has no meaning.
It's like half a page.
Not even. It's literally like a paragraph. And you're like, cool, next, nothing happens. So Rachel Zegler, let's talk about her as Lucy Gray.
Yes. First of all, major props to Rachel in this role. And for everything going in Hollywood for you right now, know that there's a lot of us that are rooting for you.
Absolutely. I thought that she was the perfect choice for Lucy Gray. And again, you know how much singing is in the movie. Did you like how much singing was in the movie?
I always love a song moment, so I have no problem with how much singing was in the movie. Honestly, there could have been more singing in the movie.
Yeah, but imagine just reading that.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like reading Daisy Jones and the Six.
But the lyrics were better in Daisy Jones and the Six. So, book, again, that's another thing from book to screen that just translates so much better, I feel. And her as an actress, I didn't think of her as someone from the South, but them throwing like a folk tune on the music and giving her a Southern accent, I really actually enjoyed that a lot, because her whole Covey people are just they don't have a place that they
settle. Nomadic.
Yeah. Thank you. I was like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Which the entire sort of like gypsy nomadic culture of that kind could also, in a lot of stories, because this is the ancestral history of Judaic people as well. It made me wonder if there was some Jewish roots going on there, which was very intriguing.
It's very possible. A lot of people think that Katniss is indigenous coded. And so people are kind of leaning that way too for Lucy Gray, but it could be really anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely appreciated the story that they gave her. It made it a well-rounded character. I don't know. I mean, how many times can you honestly watch the games and find a unique angle to get invested in such an inhumane activity, you know?
Absolutely. And it just points out how awful it is and how they were really willing to get rid of the games until this was the year. They made them stars. And they're like, it's such a commentary on celebrity and on stardom
and reality TV.
Absolutely. On what we're willing to dismiss in order to be entertained.
Absolutely. It's absolutely wild, the political and social commentary that could be underneath all of these stories in the first place. Whether they were written there or not, you can definitely make the comparison.
100%. So let's talk about that final act that I know you did not like.
Oh, do we have to talk about that act? I'd rather pretend it just didn't exist.
Only because it pertains to the love story debate. Because I don't think it's a love story. Do you think this is a love story?
It felt like two people that had been through a war together, which the games could be considered a war, that just have a certain bond to me. Like, I was not getting true love out of it.
Same. That's how I feel. I feel Choreo was very much infatuated with her. You know, she's very different than anyone in the Capitol. It's that whole, like, I've never met anyone like you before.
Exactly.
And he knew the things that, like, the things that we're all supposed to do. We should like people. We should fall in love. But in the end, she was very much a meaning to an end. And for me, it's much more a presidential resume builder story than a love story. Because, like, he's in the military. He won the congregate. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I completely get what you're saying. I don't know. I think I actually tuned out for a lot of part three. Part three felt like it was a 4-hour movie just in part three, and it was not 4 hours. And I just kept, I actually think I fell asleep for a while.
Stop. Oh my gosh.
Like, so, this is how much, like, after the games ended, I was just like, I don't care anymore. Like,
that's so funny. Yeah, because, like, the part three is after the Hunger Games, and he, because he helps her cheat, quote unquote, for the Hunger
Games. Finish the thought.
He is sent to be to the district as, like, one of the military guys. And that's, he goes to find Lucy. They're going to run away together. And then he realizes he doesn't like the woods and doesn't want to anymore. And she figures out some secrets.
It just dragged on too long.
That's exactly how this is dragging.
Yeah.
Figures out some secrets, runs away, goes back. It's like a whole thing.
Yeah.
The end. Nothing happened.
From Songbirds and Snakes to Wishes in a Kingdom Far, Far Away. That's right. We're talking about Disney's Wish movie. We're going to set this timer and here we go.
Disney's Wish celebrates the 100th anniversary of Disney animation, and they do it with a ton of Easter eggs.
Oh my God, the Easter eggs in Disney's Wish. So first of all, they tried to make this movie as original as possible, and it is its own original story. But when you go in looking for the Easter eggs, it's hard to remember that it's an original story because you're like, wow, there are so many things in here. And because it's a Disney animation, and if you're a Disney lover, you don't need to be sold on it. You're already going to see it. Let's talk about these Easter eggs, all right?
Yes.
So the movie starts with the Sleeping Beauty font.
Mm-hmm.
And from there goes into the iconic from the, like, the original Walt movies storybook opening. And I was already, like, in tears at this moment.
I love that. And also, Sleeping Beauty is my favorite Disney princess. So I love that they had both a pink and a blue moment in this film as two separate Easter eggs. So I was like, yes, give them all to me.
Yes, especially, like, so she at some point becomes the fairy godmother. She literally has the fairy godmother's, like, cape on.
Yep.
With a hood, and she's given a wand that now has magical powers. And she, like, flings the wand and it puts a pink dress on a tree. And so that was a little bit more of, like, an obvious moment. Where then you sort of, like, the beginning of the movie, you might not really get this, but they bash you over the head with it as it continues on. But her seven friends are the seven dwarfs. And, like, you can tell by the color of their wardrobe, like, they're Disney bounding. Doc yeah. even has glasses. And all of their names actually match the first letter of the dwarf that they are. So Dahlia is Doc and stuff like it. It's really fun. And there's tons of Snow White throughout this. You've got the wishing well. You've got the poison apple. There's so many moments that it just really made me wonder if they were really trying to pay homage to the first Disney animation at the same time. And maybe that's why they emphasized that one so much more than the others.
And don't forget the magic mirror.
Yes.
That happens as well. I know they were stylistically going for Snow White was a big influence. Sleeping Beauty was a big influence. And I think they did such a good job with these Easter eggs. I never once thought, oh, this is the origin story of these things. Like, no.
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 No, they're so subtle. Like, one of my favorite Easter eggs is when the dwarfs, we'll call them that, are jumping down to open the ceiling. And if you listen, you hear the Tarzan scream. Oh, in the background.
I didn't get that one.
Yep.
I love that.
Just perfectly meshed in little Easter eggs.
Now, the story is all about wishes and having your wishes granted. And the wishes are kept in these gorgeous little wish bubbles. And there's even Easter eggs in those. I love the girl who wants to fly, and she flies like Peter Pan.
Yep, flies like Peter Pan. And she's also surrounded by birds, and she's originally sitting there by like a fountain with the birds, and it's very Feed the Birds Mary Poppins, which then there's also a Mary Poppins wish of the person that just wants the perfect nanny for their children. And he pops the Wish.
That's funny. I thought the one sitting by the fountain, like, was very much Belle as well, because, like, it's her in, like, Little Town, you know?
Yes, which actually somebody pointed out to me on my second round that that's the Welcome to Rosa song. It actually mirrors a lot of the same animation cuts from the Bonjour scene in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, very cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yep. And then obviously this whole thing's Wishing Upon a Star. It's very Pinocchio. So that is obviously a big tie-in. And going back to the Peter Pan, we do have Peter himself towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And the person that gets paired with Peter is actually Disney bounding as Wendy. So there's that. And we can make a point that Star is Tinkerbell.
Oh, that's fair. Also, a hint of Mickey Mouse is what they were also trying to do with his facial expressions. And Star is adorable. He's so cute. They are so cute. I don't want to genderize him. They're just precious. And I love, and of course, you've got like your forest of animals that can talk. And that is iconic Disney princess.
And of course, within that forest, we have Bambi and Thumper. So Bambi gets thrown into there. And then we meet Little John from Robin Hood.
I love the moment they have together, too.
Yes, totally. And then later, too, when he's like, Little John's like, you don't have to worry about me. And all of the rabbits appear. Did you kind of feel like that was maybe the nod to 101 Dalmatians, or it was 101 rabbits instead of 101 Dalmatians?
I did it only because it continues to confirm my fear of rabbits. I was like, you see, they're always used as villains.
Speaking of adorable things, you really love Star, which, by the way, I found out that the animators kept trying to draw a butt cheek onto him.
Stop.
And they kept having to remove it. They were like, stop trying to make the butt cheek happen.
Oh, but you just need it like a gutatama, just like a little poop. Just one.
But Valentino, oh my God, this little, the little pajamas. I can't, everything about Valentino and the fact that Valentino is voiced by Alan Tudyk,
of course,
iconic as well. And then Valentino, of course, his wish, his dream is Zootopia.
I know. I was like, look at you. You're good. Look at you. And also there's the Beauty and the Beast Be Our Guest moment with the chickens.
Yes. It very much felt like the Be Our Guest, like, dining room table scene with all the dishware going.
It was so funny.
Then there's also a few different moments where they use shadow magic that feels very much like Dr. Facilier from Princess and the Frog, including how at the end when Magnifico's, whatever we're going to call his magic, that like crawls out of his hands and then like traps everybody. If you watch how they run down the walls, it's exactly how all the shadows run after Tiana.
Yeah, it's also very much like why has he left my brain? The villain from the Black Cauldron.
Oh, yes.
I can't think
the Horned King.
There, yes. Look at us. Nailed it. Same time.
And then here's another one that if you blink, you'll miss it. But when all of the friends and the queen come together in that moment, and they're having that big musical number, Grumpy, quote unquote, jumps off the ladder in a Fix It Felix pose.
It's
from Wreck It Ralph. It's literally the pose from Fix It Felix. I can't get that out. Fix It Felix.
Nailed it.
There we go. Got it. Third time's a charm.
I didn't even catch that, but you're so right. And when you say like the scene when they all come together, I'm like, you mean like when SAG took down Bob Iger?
Well, to me, that was the ending moment of the movie when you've got Magnifico on top of like the tower or whatever, and everyone's down there like in shackles being like, you won't take this away from us. It was totally Bob Iger versus SAG after. I cried so hard during that the first time I watched it. I was like, perfect analogy. Other little moments that I loved, when they are first breaking into the study and Star's magic is just going loose and making inanimate objects come to life. Very Sorcerer's Apprentice and Sword in the Stone.
Mm-hmm.
But the quell feather draws the Disney Channel logo.
I did not see that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see that.
It was so good. So many little things. Also in the forest, you have the mushrooms, very Alice in Wonderland moment. You also, one of the other bubbles that Magnifico pops, he talks about true love is the quote. It's Ursula from Little Mermaid. And even later when Magnifico like traps Asha, the way her body lifts up, it's very much when Ariel's losing her voice. So that was another fun little Easter egg. You can also spot the rescuers at one point.
Where?
It's in one of the forest moments.
Stop. I missed it.
And of course, in the forest, we also have a giant Pocahontas moment during this wish when she's basically at Grandma Willow and she's thinking about the things that she wants and she's spinning in the air and her hair perfectly flies off to the side, just like Pocahontas. It's incredible.
Yeah, that was a good one. I loved that one.
Yes, yes. There's so many fun things to love about this. And obviously we talked about the fairy godmother moment. I mean, she even makes an apple into a larger apple, sort of like the pumpkin carriage coming to life. And there's a Frozen moment where Asha's like, this is crazy. And all the mushrooms go, we love crazy. And I was like, oh, here we go
there we
again.
Go.
But beyond that, there's so many things to love about this movie. Chris Pine is such a wonderful villain, and his villain songs are so full of humor.
I think he's a great villain voice, and I actually do like King Magnifico. His villain song to me, while fun to sing, also to me just sounds like a really mad mom that her kids aren't listening and she's over
this
it.
This is the thanks I get, that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's how that was to me.
It also kind of feels like what's happening in the ratification process with SAG-AFTRA, and it's the negotiating committee right now singing this is the thanks I get.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're over it. You're over your teenage's bullshit. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I also really appreciated Valentino's unrelentless optimism the entire time. Like, I can't swim, as he jumps straight into the body of water, and he's so happy about it. Or like a little, oh, shark. I was just practicing. I do not see a shark, you know? Yeah. Just like.
There's definitely a lot of little funny moments in this movie.
Yes, yeah, so much humor, so much to appreciate. I even really like that when she's starting her initial tour of Rosas, she says shalom and salam, which was such a nice nod to get a little bit of Mediterranean culture in there.
Absolutely. Because this is, Rosas is a fictional Mediterranean island. And I think it's so interesting that they chose to put it there. And it's supposed to be back in like the 1800s or something. Like, it's definitely not modern.
Yeah, definitely
no iPhones.
Or maybe it was, and Magnifico just didn't want them to have any of that power because he's trying to control everything himself. Oh, and that's our time.
That's it.
Well, you'll never know where I found Hunchback then in the movie.
Oh, how dare you.
We're about to have some real fun now, or maybe I should say we're all about to lose our minds, because we're going to talk about one of my favorite movies of this year, Saltburn, and we're going to set this timer right now and get going.
Oh, Saltburn is the second film from writer-director Emerald Fennell, and it stars Jacob Elordi and Barry Keoghan. Keoghan?
I have no idea how to say his last name, but I will go with that. But also, I mean, Richard E. Grant is in this, and Carey Mulligan, and
Rosamund Pike.
Yep. Archie, I have no idea how to say his last name.
From Gran Turismo.
Yes, and he was fantastic in Gran Turismo, and that's a movie that unfortunately got hit hard by the strike, and was a surprisingly good movie. So shout out to that, to Archie and to Gran Turismo.
How do we even talk about this movie, Chelsea?
Well, we definitely have to keep it PG, and this is not a PG movie, so let's just start there.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not family friendly.
No, it is like a weird, dark, gothic thriller.
It's completely unhinged.
In the best way possible.
Absolutely.
The acting is incredible. Like, after, I've seen it twice now, and I really feel Rosamund Pike has stole the whole movie for me in the end, because she plays like the most out of touch, uppity, kind, but also the worst human being. And the way she just delivers these like very British versions of like a bless your heart, you know what I mean, is
yes.
Just so good. She shames him for being punctual. Like,
honestly, I think Archie stole the show for me, because he plays this very inconspicuous, holier than thou character, which you would think, if you knew nothing about him, that, oh, that's just him playing himself. But I've seen him in other pieces, and he's never been like that. And then in this one moment in the movie that perfectly expresses every stage of grief simultaneously happening around one dinner table, the way he breaks down, I was like, you deserve an award. What award can we give you?
Oscar. He gets an Oscar. Like, the whole cast, all of them. I agree. I think that entire grief scene is possibly the best scene in the movie. There's a lot of shock value moments.
Yes.
This is one of the most honest and grounded real moments of the entire film that I thought was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, it's amazing. I feel like we don't address so many different types of mental health issues that happen across film and TV. That we lightly coat over them, we candy coat them, we skirt past them, we hide them under a rug, and we do everything except address them head on. And this was such a great moment to depict the various types of things that could be happening all in one gorgeous scene. Even just the fact of like how the curtains close and the red curtains, so the light shining through them makes the whole room red. Beautiful cinematography, beautiful set design, like everything about this movie. And when you were mentioning shock value moments, I should also just say that this movie probably outside of the United States doesn't have a lot of shock value because everyone's a little bit more comfortable with these situations. I was like, Americans, I'm going to say it, we're a bit prudish out here.
Absolutely. But I mean, I don't know, because I don't want to say them because I want to leave them for people to enjoy if you haven't. But if you have, you know exactly what we're talking about. I don't know if we consider the graveyard scene normal anywhere else. I don't know.
Fair. Fair.
Even the bathtub scene, I don't know if that is a prudish issue.
I definitely, from the I've seen it three times with a new audience each time, and the way the audience reacts out here, I just don't feel like it would be as gasp-worthy outside of America, whereas people would just be like, wow, they really went there. But here it was more like they were appalled.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I need someone on TikTok to film an audience in London or something and just let, so I can see.
We need a Mystery Science Theater version of Saltburn with just an audience playback for us.
Yeah. Like, so the way to describe, because people have asked me, because I have told so many people, go see this movie. They're like, well, what's it about? Because honestly, the trailer gives you nothing.
Nothing.
And I think the trailer also builds it up to something that it's not.
The trailer almost feels like a British 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah. I could see that. Like, and that's not what this is at all. So I'm like, sure. When you describe it, it sounds terrible. It's a downtrodden character named Oliver who becomes best friends with a rich guy, Felix. And Felix takes him under his wing and he has a wild summer in Saltburn at the castle they live in.
A wild, unhinged summer.
You know, so that sounds terrible, but I can't tell you more because I don't want to give away the magic.
Yes, yes. But I will say that this movie is set in the mid-2000s. It starts with a class of 2006 moment, and then obviously time progresses from there. So the soundtrack for this movie is also phenomenal. And for me, it takes me back to my 20s and my college years and some of the best years of my life and really just triggers those memories for me. But even just the very last scene of this movie being, I can't even tell you what it is because I don't want to give it away, but the last scene has Murder on the Dance Floor, which has now just become the song of Saltburn.
Yes.
And I play that song on repeat every day.
It's a bop. And that song is 20 years old. I hadn't heard it until this movie. And now I'm obsessed. I love it so, so much.
That artist is so excited right now for the huge resurgence of her life.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And I love that she, I actually got to speak to her and she told me that when Emerald called her, she was like, so what's it for? And she told her what? And she was like, oh, I'm in. And she saw the scene before the movie came out and she was like, nailed it, approved. I love that so much.
What I really want to know is if that last scene was actually choreographed or if it was like 100% Barry improv of like, Barry, we're just going to follow you. You go.
Right. You know? Could have been it. And he's like, and then you're just going to end in this room and with this moment, the end. I don't know. That's a great question that I don't think anyone has asked him.
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up.
You're like, we now, to the reps that are listening to this podcast, if you could let us ask Barry this question, we would appreciate it.
Please and thank you. Yeah. But speaking of Barry, he is one of my favorite young actors in a very long time. I think he is incredible. You never really know what you're going to get. He's incredibly charming and scary at the same time. His work, you never see the work. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
And I feel like he's never played the same character twice. It's just, he's just so good.
And like, I feel like everything he's done has been award worthy and like actually up as a big contender for awards.
Absolutely. And his chemistry with Jacob Elordi is like palpable. It's so beautiful. And I love the interviews with them afterwards because you can see that they're really good friends now. And I love that. And that translated on screen really, really well.
And you have to remember for people out there that don't have much experience in the film industry, that a lot of these actors, when they get together to do these movies, have never met before, or maybe they had one casting chemistry call together or whatever, and they're having to build this chemistry in a matter of weeks. And sometimes you only have maybe 1 or 2 weeks of prep and rehearsal before you're filming, and you have to have a chemistry like you've known each other in some romantic or best friend type way for years in a matter of days. And to actually have that resonate on screen is such an amazing thing. And we love actors for that.
Absolutely. Like, you hear stories about, like, you guys need to hang out because you don't know each other. You don't like each other. You're uncomfortable. And I can just see that, like, Barry and Jacob probably, like, went out to the pub, went drinking, had wild boys nights, and they've just become besties. And Archie along, just, like, tagging along, wanting to them to like him just as much.
I love that. I will say to everybody out there that has not seen Saltburn, or if you've only seen it once, that once is not enough.
Yep.
You have to see it once for yourself, once to take it in yourself, and then once with a full audience so you know what's coming. You're waiting for their reactions, because enjoying it that next time with a full audience is a gift.
I agree completely. I've seen it twice now, and it was exactly that. Watching it, reacting, and our audience, because Chelsea, you and I saw it together the first time, what we all had the same reactions together. So that was really fun. And getting to see others have those same moments. Like, I wish with every friend I've told to go see this, I could literally be on FaceTime so I could watch it too.
Like, it's one of those moments that you always tell your friends, call me after you see it. And like, nobody ever does. Like, no, seriously, call me.
Because we have to discuss. Because I also have so many thoughts about it. And I only have one issue with it. And that is Barry's, Oliver's motivation. Like, you know, the story comes out in the end. But I want to know a little bit more why and where it came from. And I feel like that's the only thing that's not clear for me.
And I want to say that this movie starts off as just like a typical buddy movie. And there's an unexpected twist that happens about 3/4 of the way through, where everything starts to unwind in a way that, at least for me, I didn't see coming at
Same.
All. And it kind of takes a turn to where, if you like the TV show You, that Netflix is You, you're going to love this movie.
Absolutely. And that's the perfect analogy for it. You, I didn't even think of that. Look at you.
Oh, I thought it right away. Yeah. I was just like, oh, we're going a little like Penn Badgley, Joe Goldberg here. Okay.
Absolutely. And so that's my only thing. I'm like, I understand who all these characters are. I just want a little bit more why from everybody. And then I'm 1,000% even more in, because I'm already in. I don't care. It's still a great movie and I will recommend it till like, okay.
One final thought. That was our thing. I hope everyone out there slurps it up.
Oh.
And you'll get that after you see the movie. And with that, that is our 4 movies today that we are talking about. Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. Like I said, I have missed this. I love talking movies with you.
So yeah, it's so much time. I could do this all day and all night with you. I mean, there's been so many movies in the past few months, especially with the strikes. There's part of me that's like, should we go back and talk about, like, we mentioned Gran Turismo. Like,
yeah.
There's so many films that I feel like need love. Like, I was shocked by the movie Strays that came out.
I just watched that.
Yeah, I expected nothing from that movie, and it was laugh out loud funny.
It was very old school 90s comedy, and I'm like, look, if this came out when like American Pie came out, it would have killed.
Right? Absolutely. Was there something else in this last like time frame?
Yeah, I really liked Quiz Lady, which I don't know if it's still in theaters, but I know you can watch it on Hulu, and it stars Sandra Oh and Awkwafina, and
great cast.
Loved it.
Amazing. Good to know. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us here on the High Voltage Radio Hour. You can keep in touch with me on a daily by following Sprinkled by Magic on Instagram or High Voltage Mag on TikTok. Sarah, where can they find you?
You can always find me at Smells Like Teen Angst on all social media platforms.
Amazing. All right. Well, thank you. And we'll talk to you all soon.
Bye.